What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the seventh edition of the NFL Weeks in Review of another NFL season. I'm sorry, not season. Week has gone down, and even more to talk about than last week, as there will be, and building up every single week. I'm here once again, my good friend Connor Cavanaugh. My guy, how have you been?
Good weekend for me. My Commanders won. Rodgers and Brady, the old men, are both 3-4, and the New York Giants are 6-1. Don't think we were going to be saying that going into the year. So I'm good, and you know the craziness of the NFL is as good as always.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely, the old men have to figure it out. And as for the Giants, dude, you know what? I'm happy for the Giants. The Cinderella story is cute and all. But I don't think it's going to go crashing down because the whole NFC East division, and that's just that light schedule that every team has, is only going to push these teams to think they're more than what they are. But we'll see how it goes out and plans out as the weeks go on. All the division games are going to be the best games, so that'll be fun. Let's drop right into it. Thursday Night Football game. We had an actual great primetime game that wasn't a Sunday night for the first time in the Saints and Cardinals. The Cardinals came out and with DeAndre Hopkins back after his suspension, and they looked pretty good. DeAndre Hopkins, right where he left off. He looked fantastic. He didn't look like he missed a beat, and they came out with a big win.
Yeah, no, definitely a big win for the Cardinals, who have been a little bit inconsistent to start the year. And even though the Saints aren't world beaters right now, they still are a tough defense, and I feel like the Saints play everybody pretty tough. So, really good to see D-Hop back out there. Andy Dalton with the 3 interceptions really killed them, and really just overall a nice win for the Cardinals, in a primetime game, against a pretty solid defense, and hopefully a good kickstarter for Kyler and D-Hop, because Kyler really, the first 6 weeks of the year didn't have a target that he trusted like he trusts D-Hop. So maybe, we see this Cardinals offense, take a big jump moving forward with D-Hop, and, for New Orleans, bad quarterback play, it's going to cost you the game. But we finally, like you said, we finally got a good primetime game with some high scoring, and good on the Cardinals to get a big win.
Yeah, and speaking of DeAndre Hopkins coming back, he had 12 more targets than any other receiver on his team, which he loves DeAndre Hopkins. Those are 1 and 2. Those guys love each other. And you know what? It works. It works. It worked in the past for them. It worked to get them to where they are in the early MVP talks from Kyler last year. So it's good to see their chemistry just jump right back into it, and they look just as good as always. The Taysom Hill thing with me and the Saints, the Saints side of this is the defense for the Saints has been pretty solid. Obviously, there's no defense in this game, but that's been their one thing that's kind of kept them in games because their offense isn't doing it. Alvin Kamara has been better in recent weeks, and he didn't really do much this week, at least rushing the football. But the whole Andy Dalton debacle in the end of the first half, he threw 2 picks within, I think, 1.5 minutes of each other. One was a pick six. Or maybe both of us pick six. Who knows? I think Arizona's defense had 2 touchdowns, though, this week, which is definitely something you don't want to see. And a veteran from like Andy Dalton, who's been around, hasn't had any great years, but he's had some solid years with Cincinnati, did not look good. He did throw for 300-plus yards. He did throw 4 touchdowns, but the 3 picks definitely hurt him. And I raised the question, man. I know this team likes to use Taysom Hill, however they use him, with his, playing him anywhere, tight end, running back, sometimes a wide receiver. But you think this guy could maybe take over reins at quarterback for this team? He's getting paid quarterback money. He's getting paid $140 million, 4 years. That's a solid deal. What do you think? Do you think this Andy Dalton's going to keep playing? They're going to keep him in the same role? Or do you think Taysom Hill should get back there under center and probably start throwing the football around a little bit?
Well, I mean, I think we've seen when they've tried to go to Taysom as the full-time guy, we have seen the warts of Taysom Hill. But with that being said, I feel like right now there's not a good enough balance with what they try to do with Taysom. I feel like every time you see him go under center, for the Saints so far this year, it's pretty much 100% always, a run play. And, obviously Taysom is really good with the ball in his hands and he can make people miss. But I think if you added a little bit more balance, you might be able to get more out of Taysom, keep Dalton off the field a little bit more. But I'm not fully on the train of going straight to Taysom because I just feel like what we've seen full-time out of Taysom behind, you know, behind center has not been, you know, a very good sample size in terms of throwing the football full time. But I think if you did mix it in a little bit more within the offense and kept Dalton still a piece, then I think you might have some success. And they can run the football too, so, you know, with Ingram and Kamara. So for me, I think they need to use him a little bit better than they're using him now. But I think full time, I'm just not a huge believer in Taysom Hill when it comes to throwing the football.
I understand. I think what this is more, Andy Dalton's not really the type of quarterback for this team. He's not mobile enough. Like, he's not, like, the guy that... This team's built behind the run and behind that line to where I think Taysom Hill can get more action with maybe, you know, more RPO stuff, more just fakes, some more maybe moving him around the line of scrimmage, maybe some hard... I don't know, stuff like this. But I think the guy getting paid this type of money, now they can use him wherever they want to use him, which is what they do. But getting paid the money that he's getting should at least see more action to where they can use a little bit more of everything that he can do. That's basically what I'm trying to say. But I don't know. Him under center, I get your point. I absolutely get your point. But I still think you can do other things with him under center. You can still run more crazy packages with him. You can run two running back packages and have guys in and out and fake handoffs here and there and use him as like more option plays and stuff like that. But I don't know. I guess that's just what they want to do. And the Saints are really not in a position to where they can push themselves forward to go fight for a division, even though they are one game out of the division by rule. So we'll move on because we're going to jump into a team that is on a downward spiral and saw it coming from a mile away. I've been saying this week after week. And I think it's about time people start understanding that this team's not that good, especially with Tom Brady under center.
Yeah. You know, I got to give you credit. You were spot on with this one. You know, a few weeks ago and for the last few weeks, you know, building up to, you know, Sunday, you've been saying these things about Tampa Bay. And I've been pushing back a little bit, you know, saying that, you know, the schedule isn't that hard. The division's not that hard. They're going to figure it out. It's Tom Brady. Well, you know, right now you are 100% right, and I was 100% wrong.
It's not even about figuring out. It's about the team itself. I don't care about the division, who wins the division, whatever. If they win the division or not, they're not, right now, a good football team. They haven't been for 7 weeks. I don't care how they won their games. I don't care. I care more how they lose their games. And they're losing their games very ugly to the worst offensive team in the league, in the Carolina Panthers, who just got rid of their best weapon. And it's just embarrassing.
With a backup quarterback.
Yeah, and they got ran all over. Like, their defense didn't step up at all.
No.
Tom Brady hasn't done anything. He just kind of throws the ball, and, you know, that's it, and hopes the offense moves. Now Mike Evans had a big drop in this game. But the team has been the same team since week one.
Mm-hmm.
There's no improvements.
You're right. And obviously Mike Evans is a Pro Bowl receiver. He's one of the best in the game. For me, Chris Godwin has always been Brady's favorite receiver. And Godwin doesn't look right to me. I think they might have rushed him back from his ACL tear last year because they're in so much trouble right now, and he doesn't look right to me. Brady looks bad right now. And I guess when you look at, you know, the final line for Brady, you know, 290 yards, obviously didn't throw a touchdown, but it doesn't look completely awful. But, I mean, the Carolina Panthers, you only score 3 points. You know, if you're the GOAT, you have to do more than that, and there's really no excuse. So you're 100% right. I can't make another excuse for Tampa this week. I've done it for a couple of weeks now. This is bad, and they need to figure it out because you're right. Their defense got run all over all day long.
I don't care, man, about the Tom Brady stats. Whatever the stats he put up, I don't care if he throws for 350 yards. If they lose a game like this, I'm not interested. I just don't want to see it. You can't see it. Their running backs, once again, there's no running game. They're very readable. The offense is one-dimensional, it feels. They have no one explosive on this team. Their explosive player is supposed to be like a Chris Godwin, who's kind of a more all-around receiver than a Mike Evans is. They don't have a guy that is going to do it all that you're kind of scared of. Mike Evans is a very good receiver, right? But it feels sometimes where he kind of looks out of the game. Same as Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look interested to compete. If you're interested in competing, you go win this game against the Panthers, and you win it with ease, and they couldn't score a touchdown. They couldn't really get in the red zone at all. They couldn't do anything. and you let P.J. Walker, who didn't really do anything himself, but he did enough, and he threw the ball well, didn't turn the ball over, and just let the guys do their thing against a team that is crumbling. And it's, I gotta point to Todd Bowles. He's not a head coach. He's a defensive coordinator. And you know what? It's starting to show, because there's nothing in this offense that looks special.
Brady hated Arians so much that he was able to force him up into the offices.
He gets to do whatever he wants.
And off the field, brings in the guy that he likes in Todd Bowles. And the reasons that we heard, you know, the rumors were that him and Bowles would, you know, create a game plan throughout the week. And then, you know, on Saturday, Arians would come in with you know, a red pencil and mark out what he didn't like and throw in stuff that he wanted that wasn't what they had game planned for all week. And that's the problem that Brady had with him. Now, those are just rumors. But Bruce Arians' offense sure as hell looked a lot better than what Todd Bowles' offense looks like right now. So if that is the case, maybe Bruce Arians was doing the right thing by going in and changing those game plans. You're totally right. I don't think Bowles is a head coach. Jake Storiali of John Boy Media says this all the time when, you know, when talking about bad baseball teams on, you know, the various baseball podcasts that, you know, they do. Make us talk about you. Right now, Tampa Bay is giving us no reason to talk about them, and you've been on it for a while.
So yeah.
For me right now, you know, I need to see a couple of wins. I need to see some good football. And as of right now, I'm done talking about him. You, Tom Brady, make us talk about you again.
Absolutely. And I don't care about their wins, man. It's just ugly football that doesn't deserve attention. But you got to call it how you see it, and you got to call out the people that are not performing. And right now, it's the entire team. And something's got to change. If it's from up top, if it's from the coaching standpoint, if it's Bruce Arians, whoever it is, it doesn't matter. Figure it out. You're the Buccaneers. You have a 45-year-old Tom Brady that came out of retirement to go play for you. Whatever he's saying himself, whatever he's doing behind the scenes, we'll never know. But something's got to change.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to move on from there, because this team irritates me like no other in the entire league. It really pisses me off. Another team that pisses me off are the Cowboys. The Cowboys always piss me off, but they did their job. The Lions aren't really what we thought the Lions, well, what people saw in the Hard Knocks
mm-hmm.
videos, the, you know, the whole hype and mop and the top offense in the league.
And
at
we
one
did
point.
A little bit too.
And we did. And you know what? Deservedly so when they played well. But we're seeing now, it's been a couple weeks, 3 weeks, that they haven't really done much. And Jared Goff isn't that guy. He's not. They're missing DeAndre Swift, which is a big piece. But Jared Goff's not the guy, and it comes down to quarterback play at the end of it. And that's really it. Amon-Ra St. Brown got hurt in this game.
Mm-hmm.
But the Lions just aren't it. But welcome back, Dak, at least.
Yeah, you know, the Lions are not very good. They are very banged up on the offensive side. But, you know, isn't everybody. It's football. People get hurt. So, you know, that's no excuse there. For me, this was more about the Dak comeback. And to be honest with you, the Lions are the worst defensive team by points allowed in football right now, and it's not that close. And if you're Dak Prescott, you had a garbage time late touchdown throw.
To Peyton Hendershot.
Yes, thank you.
Hendershot, sorry.
Hendershot. And if that doesn't happen, you put up 17 points against the worst defensive team by points allowed in the league right now. Dak didn't look great, and I, you know, it is, you know, hasn't played since week one. The finger was on his throwing hand, so yes, you do give a week, you know, or so, you know, to let him get back into the groove of things. But once again, the Cowboys win a game because of their defense. Their defense is the calling card. Micah Parsons is a monster. I made the joke last week about Darius Slay possibly being the defensive player of the year. It is not even close right now. It's Micah Parsons. Defensively, that is how they're going to win football games. So for me, Dak came back, didn't look great, whatever. Defensively, they gave up 6 points, and that's how they're going to win games. And if I'm a Cowboys fan, that's what I care about, and that's what I take away.
Sums up perfectly. Seriously, that's the Cowboys in a nutshell. It's been all year. And I don't really expect too much from this offense. Got some pieces. Tony Pollard looked fine. Zeke had a couple squirts. He got banged up. But offensively, wide receiver wise, they're not all there. They're not completely healthy yet. Michael Gallup isn't, you know, standing up to what he did last year really at all. And that's just about it. It's kind of lackluster. But you're right. The win games with defense. And they're doing it, and there's a lot of games ahead that they're probably going to do it some more. And we'll see where that takes Dallas. I'm not really confident in them, but again, it's a weak division. They can really just kind of play mediocre offensive football and win games. So, Giants-Jags. I want you to take the floor on this first, because as another person that's an NFC East fan, well, of a team in the division, what is your take on the Giants?
So, the last couple of weeks coming into this game against Jacksonville, they've played really well. They've had a couple of games where they've gone out and they've won those games. This game against Jacksonville was a little bit different. They didn't look great for major parts of this game, and Jacksonville had a couple of opportunities to really blow this game out early and really put, you know, the Giants in their misery, you know, in the first half, and they couldn't do it. Now, you can also flip that over and say, well, good teams, you know, they bounce back, you know, off of, you know, things like that. They make things happen, and they figure out ways to win when they're not at their best. But the Giants were definitely not at their best on Sunday, and they still were able to get a win. Again, Jacksonville is not a hugely competitive football team. Travis Etienne did have a big game. But for me, like I kind of just summed up, you know, better teams win these kind of football games. You know, the Jacksonville didn't play well enough to win, and honestly, neither really did the Giants. But the Giants are the better team right now, and they were able to figure it out. And to me, that's all coaching. They're 6-1 right now, and I think it's a little bit fluky of a 6-1, but I think it's a lot less fluky of a 6-1 than I thought when they were 3-1, 4-1.
Yeah,
I'm starting to believe in them a little bit more. I'm not still fully sold, but believing in them a little bit more. They have a good coach in Brian Daboll, and I think that's pretty evident right now. And better teams find ways to win crappy games like this. That's exactly what they did.
Yeah, Daboll's pushing all the right buttons for this team. They really are. Getting all the guys going, and you know what? He can't do no wrong right now. And sometimes you live off that high, and they're living off a high of a new coach coming into a new system, winning early football games. And I'm sure the locker room's fired up every game. He's probably going crazy. He's a hothead type of coach, and it's what you need. You need those type of guys to really hype up your football team. And really, what it comes down to in the game sense is Daniel Jones isn't making mistakes still.
He's not. Daboll's putting him in great position.
He is. Right, he can't be, like, he's putting him in a position where he can't fail unless he forces things to fail. And he's not forcing really anything. He's doing a lot with his legs this year, which is good to see, because he is a more mobile quarterback than people really think, I would think, at least in my opinion, that people don't really know. But he's been just pretty solid with scrambling away, knowing when to get out of bounds, knowing when to take the slide, knowing when to go take it yourself. And that also is evident to having no wide receivers on your team. Everyone's hurt. Darius Slayton was there, but there's no Sterling Shepard.
Mm-hmm.
And they got no one to throw to. They really do. Don't. They have no one to throw to. There was 6 catches from Wandale Robinson, who I like as a rookie. Darius Slayton had 3 catches, and you don't have Kadarius Toney, who's out. Kenny Galladay's just kind of useless in this offense, whatever, if he's banged up or just not playing for whatever reason. And that's really it. Everything else was Saquon Barkley, Daniel Jones, but good defense.
Mm-hmm.
Defense was solid enough to get him some games and give pressure to Trevor Lawrence. No sacks, but make him uncomfortable. He threw just about 50% on the day. And if you do that, just opposing quarterbacks, you're going to win games.
You're going to be in them. Yep, exactly. So, I mean, you know, I still, like I said, I need to see a little bit more, particularly out of Danny Dimes, but I mean, you can't take it away from them. They're 6-1 right now, and
it's kind of insane.
It is. It really is.
With that, if you look at that roster, the injuries on this roster they've had, and what they're really working with for that team to be 6-1 is very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you got to give them some praise. And I think now we're gonna start seeing more people around the league give them props, give Daboll a lot of props for what he's done and uplifting this team to be where they are, and it's something that I'm sure none of us would have guessed. You look at this roster, even put this roster against the entire NFC South, you could make an argument that 3 of those 4 teams in the NFC South have better rosters. Like Buccaneers, obviously, better roster. Saints, I'm going to be completely honest with you, probably better roster with Michael Thomas and Jarvis Landry and you name it. Whatever, that's not the point. But the team's making it work with less, and you don't see that much in the NFL.
And that's coaching.
And it's coaching, and it's working. So whatever it is, it's working. I don't want it to keep going. I want it to stop quickly, but it is what it is, man. We move on, and they're in a happy place. They're just living on a high. And sometimes the NFL, you live on a high, you get high at the right time, even though it's early in the season still. You keep pushing forward and getting some wins. So I want to talk about the Tennessee Titans-Colts game real quick. Not much in the game, per se. But Matt Ryan got benched yesterday for, was it Sam Ehlinger?
Yep.
Sam Ehlinger. And I never looked into the stats, really, of Matt Ryan. But Matt Ryan this season has been very below average, and he's been very bad. Coming into the year, you even said to me, you even texted me the other day, saying that, you know, Carson Wentz is the problem, they need a new QB, and whatever it is. But they're just getting these veteran guys now that just are just, it's like a, just a recycling bin in Indianapolis. Matty Ice, on the season, has 9 interceptions. He has 9 fumbles. He has a completion percentage on average of around 67%, which isn't awful percentage-wise, but you're losing games, and it's pretty bad. It's bad. Matt Ryan, who is a respectable veteran from basically around the league, anyone you know, he played well his career in Atlanta.
Won an MVP.
Won MVP. Went to a Super Bowl. Blew it, but they went. And he just looks bad, dude. And I hope Ehlinger can maybe right the ship, but I don't know what else you do here for Indianapolis.
Yeah, the weirdest part about this situation for me, and you pointed out that I texted you, you know, about the joke, but the weirdest part about the situation for me is the fact that Reich went right out and said that the plan is for him to start the rest of the year. To me, that's telling. You know, all jokes aside, I mean, You talked about the revolving door in terms of bringing in veteran quarterbacks. Like you said, Matt Ryan's a very well respected, very liked guy in the NFL circles. But I mean, if you've been watching Colts football this year, you're seeing it. He can't hold on to the football. He's not making great decisions. He's been under a lot of pressure, and he just doesn't have it right now. And that does come as you get older. You can't, I mean, the fumbles have been really, really bad. Some of the interceptions you can kind of get over, but it seems like every time he gets hit in the pocket, he's fumbling the football. It's really hurting Indianapolis right now. They were, you know, their roster is pretty solid, and they were, they had, you know, pretty big aspirations coming into the year with, you know, Jonathan Taylor and, you know, Michael Pittman with the new veteran quarterback that they thought was going to be, you know, such an upgrade. And it hasn't worked out. I do give credit to Frank Reich in Indianapolis for pulling the plug, because you do see a lot of times teams running with their guys
sticking
too
them
long
out.
Because they don't want to face the facts that they were wrong. Indianapolis came right out, you know, after 7 weeks and said, "Listen, we messed up with the Matt Ryan trade. It hasn't worked out. We're going to move in a different direction." Hopefully for Indianapolis, this is the turning card that shows you to not, like, you have to move on from this revolving door of veteran quarterbacks. I mean, you know, Phillip Rivers, Carson Wentz, Ryan, none of them have worked how you thought they were going to work. And at some point, you have to turn, you know, to a young guy who you think might be able to, you know, be your franchise moving forward. Maybe they think that is Sam Ehlinger. Maybe they don't. Maybe Matt Ryan's just been so bad that they feel like they have no other choice. But either way, I do give them credit for doing what they're doing. Doing what they're doing. I do feel a little bit bad for Matt Ryan. You know, he's a very light guy. But, you know, this is a results-driven league. Yeah, I mean, what have you done for me lately?
It's week to week. It's a week to week league.
Nobody cares about the MVP from 5 years ago when, you know, you have 9 fumbles and 9 picks through 7 weeks. So, you know, hopefully it's a little bit of a spark. Sorry. Hopefully it's a little bit of a spark.
You're right.
And like I said, I do give some credit to Indianapolis for doing what they did.
No, and you're right. You're right with the credit. And they're, you know, righting their wrongs quicker than the, you know, other teams have. And
how many times have we seen teams go way too long with bad situations because they didn't want to admit they were wrong?
Oh, all the time. You see it in the league all the time. You really do. And it's too late. And then the chemistry, the whole team doesn't like it. You go and force your hand and you make it a worse draft pick, or you go rush and try to get a guy that you don't really want, but you got to get someone younger in there. You're right, absolutely. And the Indianapolis team, they're 3-3-1. They're right there. And you know what? They have a chance to make a push because the roster's good. It is. It really is good. I hope Ellinger comes in here and plays well because the team needs someone to just build a rapport with. Because these guys, the Philip Rivers, like you said, the Carson Wentz, those guys are what they are. They're what they are as a player. They're not really going to change. They're old enough now. Well, not Carson Wentz, but Philip Rivers and Matt Ryan, respectively, they're just, it is what it is. You're going to get whatever they get out of them. These guys, you got to maybe coach them into being something, into the system that you want to run, and hopefully they turn a new leaf. I think they will. I think they will eventually, because there's a window for this team, and it's still open for a few more years. But people get older, injuries happen, and you're seeing it here and there now with Jonathan Taylor. And he's young, getting banged up a little bit. But the team needs to move on, and I'm happy they did. I am happy they did. But it does suck for Matt Ryan. Because I always loved him in Atlanta. He was like always your, you know what? We're going to bring fantasy into this, right? He was your guy. You just, if no one else is there, we'll throw Matt Ryan here. He gets 300 yards a game, you know, just gets points for you. He's one of those guys that just goes in there and does his job and leaves. But some people's careers just hit a brick wall.
Yep.
And you know what? He's on the downward spiral right now. And you said it. He's frail and fragile. He can't hold on to nothing. And it does suck to see. Hopefully he's a good enough guy to coach up Ellinger a little bit and get this guy going. I think he is too. So we'll see what the Colts do. But that was really my takeaway. Another takeaway real quick from this game, if we're going to talk about it at all. Derrick Henry ran the ball 30 times. And one other run was from another running back. So I thought that was interesting.
Not sustainable.
They just ran him into the ground. And yeah, that's not winning football. But they've been doing it for years. And that's what Tennessee is. We said it before. We've said Tennessee, like, they can't keep doing this.
You're right. I mean, it's fun to look at that he had 30 carries.
30 carries,
you know,
man.
Week 15 through, you know, week 17, you know, as the year dribbles down, you're going to see that affect them, and it's just not sustainable.
And Derrick Henry's been, he's been putting in numbers now for a few years of these type of carries, and his body has hung up for a big guy, a tall guy, you know, strong dude. So good on him, but it's just not how it works in this league. But we're going to move on, man. The Ravens and the Browns. The Ravens didn't blow a lead.
They did. You stole my thunder.
I stole it. I took it.
I wanted to be the one to say it.
Go ahead. Let me hear about the Ravens, please. Because I need you to go in more depth. Because depth, oh, that's a word. What do you think the Ravens did really good in this game?
They ran a football well. Gus Edwards looked really good. Kenyon Drake looked really good. And you know, I know Cleveland's not a world beater, but this is a tough divisional game, you know, against a divisional opponent that's going to play, you know, very hard. And, you know, like you said, I mean, they didn't blow the lead, which is the biggest part of this game for me. Lamar looked, you know, he looked okay. He didn't look great, but I'm not really worried about Lamar. They were able to get the run game going. Cleveland, you know, was also able to run the ball a little bit, but at the end of the day, you came out with a win. And sometimes when you know, you play a tough divisional opponent like the Cleveland Browns, you throw all the stats out the window, you throw the game's film out the window, and you just take the win and you move on to next week. And I think in this situation, that's kind of what you have to do. Because some of the film, it wasn't great for Baltimore, but it's a nice, solid divisional, you know, win against the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, you take that and you move on.
One thing I might be reaching about here. Did Harbaugh take the ball out of Lamar Jackson's hands on purpose here? They didn't, because he's been throwing the ball a lot. He's been throwing the ball a lot more in years past to just force the ball down the field to like a Mark Andrews who didn't have a great game last week. Not a great game last week at all, I don't think. Though they had Bateman back. He had Devin Duvernay back. He had his guys. And he threw the ball 16 times. The ball's taken out of his hands for maybe a reason to just say, hey, Lamar, you're trying to do too much for yourself and your own brand and your own, you know, your money and whatever you want. We got to win football games. Don't force stuff down the field. And I might be reaching, but they ran the ball a lot, dude. They ran the ball, including, if we're going to include Lamar Jackson's escaping the pocket, they ran the ball 43 times.
Yeah.
Compared to 16 passes.
I don't think you're reaching at all. I really don't think you are. I mean, I think it's a lot of that, and I also think it's a little bit of just how the game flow was going because they were running the football so well.
Yeah, they were doing it well, yeah.
But, I mean, at the end of the day, in a 23-20 game, 16 pass attempts, even if you're running the football well, is very low. I don't think you're reaching at all. I actually think you're pretty spot on.
I mean, think about it, right? What's Cleveland? They have Jacoby Brissett. They're a run-heavy team.
Yes.
Jacoby Brissett threw the ball 27 times.
Yep.
for what it's worth. Now, you got an Amari Cooper that didn't really do anything, but, like, there's no really different excuse from between the two teams, and obviously the Ravens run the ball more than any other team in the league, other than maybe the Titans are second to them.
Yep.
But I think it was strategic to just late in this game, when they had to go down and score and keep the game afloat, they got a field goal when it mattered, and they won the football game by just not forcing the ball down the field. And I think that's something to do with maybe the coach saying, hey, Lamar, worry about us. Let's just hand the ball off. Let's do what we're doing really, really well. Let's not try to change it. And
no hero
do
ball.
Something. Yeah, no hero ball. Because the last 3 weeks, you see him trying to pick up fumbles, run out of the pocket, force the ball down the field to go make a play when the better play is throw it out of bounds, hand the ball off, move on to the next play.
Yep.
Or forcing balls into the end zone and get pick in the end zone when that can't happen either. Maybe he's just better off just get it out of his hands. Because there's examples all over the place that tape's been seen from all these teams and even themselves, obviously, that it might be a better play to just keep handing it off and do the right thing that's working. And sometimes football's not a complicated sport when it comes to that sense. If something's working, you stick to it until it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, I don't think you're reaching at all. I think you're spot on. And it got him a win.
Got him a win.
So,
and it was a big win. They needed this win.
Yes, they really, you're right.
They needed to right the ship. So, and they did. Against the Browns team, there was no slouch. Browns team, I mean, I know they're 2-5, but the Browns played tough. You know, it's tough to stop that offense at times when they're both running guys are, you know, run the football at an extremely high level. And it's a good win. They're 4-3, and they move on to the, obviously, they're second place now behind the Bengals, who look very good today.
They did.
I don't really want to touch on the Bengals here. It was kind of a slugfest from Joe Burrow. I think he had 300-plus yards in the first half. So that's very interesting. But we're going to go to your boys, and the boys in burgundy and gold. So, you know, Washington and Green Bay. Initial thoughts, man, because my initial thoughts is Green Bay really just doesn't look great. But I don't really have any initial thoughts. I just think Green Bay didn't look great, and kind of Commanders just stole a victory that they had a chance to go steal a win, and they stole a win.
Yeah, stealing is the right word for it, because Green Bay had every opportunity to win this game. I mean, Heinicke was putrid in the first half. He was terrible. But Rodgers, you know, minus turnovers, was just as bad. He looked just as bad without the turnovers. And they had every chance to win this game. You know, on Washington's side, Heinicke is not better than Carson Wentz, and I just want to get that out here right now. But there is an it factor with Taylor Heinicke. The guys love him. They go out and they play hard for him, and there's a different vibe around the game when Taylor Heinicke's in the game. He's also got a really good rapport with Terry McLaurin, and we finally saw a big breakout day from Terry. But that was all in the second half. The first half, the Packers didn't do anything when Heinicke looked like crap. Heinicke was horrible in the first half. All the good stuff that we saw from the Washington offense came in the second half. And in the first half, it was all bad. Great field position for Green Bay. They got a pick six to score a touchdown. It was all in favor of Green Bay in the first half, and they didn't do anything with it. I'm very concerned about Aaron Rodgers. He doesn't look good to me. I'm not going to give him the bull excuse of the wide receivers that he's been getting all year, because he doesn't look good either. And this was more about Green Bay for me. They do not look good.
Does he get the Brady treatment?
A little bit. Because Rodgers is Rob. I mean,
yeah, he's Aaron
Rodgers. Guy's transcendent. He throws the football better than anybody we've ever seen. But, I mean, right now, I mean, you sat there and spent 10 minutes ripping Tom Brady to begin this episode. We should be doing the same thing with Rodgers right now. This is bad. I mean, the offense does not, the offense that they're running right now is not working. 90% of the throws in the first half were these little underneath dunks to Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, mainly Aaron Jones. And there's just no explosion to the offense, and they have guys to explode. Alan Lazard can explode. Christian Watson is one of the faster receivers in football. Didn't get a target. Romeo Doubs looked really good for 3 weeks.
Dropped a couple balls.
Dropped a couple balls, but they're not. There's no explosion on the offensive
right,
side.
Right.
It's very bland, and Aaron Rodgers is a big reason for that right now because there's very few guys that pretty much design their whole game that they're running through. Aaron Rodgers is one of them. So it's as much on Aaron Rodgers as it is on LaFleur. It's as much on Aaron Rodgers as it is the receiving corps or the defense who gave up, you know, some points to Washington in the second half. It all comes back to the guy. It all comes back to number 12.
That's a good point. A great, great point. And you want to rip into a little bit? What are my opinions? If you want to rip into the Tampa Bay, you want to rip into Aaron Rodgers and what I think about this team real quick? A little bit? Okay, right. I will. I will, just for a bit.
Let's hear it.
Okay? Aaron Rodgers last year played MVP level, did he not?
He did.
He did. What did the team do? What did they do? Green Bay.
14-3, I believe?
Yeah, pretty good. Where did they go in the playoffs?
Nowhere.
Okay. So, we're going to move on. This team, right, Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, I'm going to say. I'm never a big fan of Matt LaFleur. I know you said in the past that you like Matt LaFleur.
I do like Matt LaFleur.
What did Aaron Jones do last year?
Aaron Jones, he was very good.
He was very good, right? What was their defense last year?
They were very good.
Okay. But their two superstar players played like superstar players.
They did.
They're not right now.
No, they are not.
Aaron Rodgers is not playing a superstar player. What does that open up? The holes from your coaching, the holes from your scheme, the guys not being in it together. Now, again, there's a lot of no Devontae Adams, but
If you're as good as Aaron Rodgers is,
it shouldn't matter.
You figure it out.
Right. And I'm looking here. I didn't watch the game personally, so I didn't see exactly what you saw. So everything you take, I take it wholeheartedly what you said. But off just a stat sheet, which I know numbers, I hate saying it. I hate even looking at numbers. But numbers aren't awful for Aaron Rodgers, even though you expect him to throw for, you know, 275 plus. The completion percentage was fine. He threw two touchdowns. He did throw both dink and dunks to Aaron Jones. That were two touchdown passes. So that's, you know, is what it is. But the guy, to me, seems in the same way Tom Brady does, not interested.
No, you're right.
And now, since things aren't working, he's not playing at a high level. The offense is not clicking. There could be some things with him and Matt LaFleur. There could be some just intertwining situations where guys aren't getting along. The locker room might be a little bit too up in arms. They're trying to figure it out. They might be panicking. And I don't think Matt LaFleur, again, I'm going to coaching because it's what I do. It's not always coaching, but I got to go to it here. If things aren't clicking, you have to figure it out as a group, including quarterback, obviously, including quarterback. But as your head coach of your football team that just won 14 games last year and didn't do anything in the playoffs, when things start to go wrong, bring it together. And they're not doing it. And their offense has looked just as bad as Tampa Bay has the entire year. I think they had one great offensive week, which was a good week. I'm not going to go back because who cares? But it's the same boat, man, as Todd Bowles and Tom Brady. Something there is in the air, and they're not getting along to a point to where they're getting playmakers involved. I mean, I need to see you got Sammy Watkins in free agency to do what? He hasn't done anything all year.
You don't even see him on
the field. I know he's injury prone, in quotation marks. But the guy is a speed. He's a speedy guy who has decent hands, and he's not playing. The guy needs to play. Your two rookies aren't getting involved enough. Dobbs has, but Christian Watson's supposed to be like, wow, okay, he's like the better of the two, and he's not even on the field. Yep. So I think it goes to coaching, and when things go wrong, he can't figure out a way to get the ship right. And again, they lost the football game, but they put up empty stats in this game that don't show to anyone that they're back or that things are getting figured out. And Aaron Rodgers isn't a guy to go really assemble a team that he doesn't believe in. I don't think he believes in his team.
No.
And that's the big problem.
Yeah. No, to your point about LaFleur, and like you said, I do like him, but he's not a motivation locker room guy.
No,
the guy's an X's and O's genius. There's a big difference in, you know, what you see from some. I mean, just looking at this game, Ron Rivera's not an X's and O's guy. Ron Rivera is a player's guy. The guy's a motivator. He keeps a locker room where it's supposed to be, and he lets Scott Turner and Jack Del Rio do all the X's and O's. He doesn't even touch it. Matt LaFleur's not like that. So when the locker room is souring, if that is the case,
Excuse me.
LaFleur is not going to be the savior for that locker room. I don't believe it.
I think he shies away from...
I totally agree.
All that, he just kind of lets them figure it out, let them do their thing.
I totally agree.
He just stays back
away from it. And with that being said, if you are the X's and O's genius, and your locker room is souring, you need to be perfect with the X's and O's. And they did not convert a single third down in this whole entire game, the first time in Aaron Rodgers' career that he went a full game without converting a third down conversion. Some of that's on the players. 99% of third down efficiency and how we look at it is coaching and the play. The play that's written up. That's all on Matt LaFleur. And, you know, the other thing about the locker room is Aaron Rodgers is a diva. And,
he's a diva.
And he's a baby. Time. And he's a blame deflector. They showed a camera angle of Dobbs dropping a pass. And Rodgers screaming, "What the F are we doing?" Meanwhile, you know, the last three passes prior to that were off target. He's a blame deflector. And if that locker room is going to go sour, it's going to go sour real bad. And they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, dude. Exactly. And I want to bring up, we brought locker room up. I'm going to shy away from Green Bay for a second. Because you talked about Carson Wentz not being a good quarterback. But you said something before when you were talking. One thing about Carson Wentz in the past few years, ever since the end of his Philly career, is he started to become a bad locker room guy. And you started saying about how people rally behind Taylor Heineke. And obviously the playoff game, he went all out, did everything he could. They love him. I don't think Carson gets the respect because I don't know what it is as a teammate, but he's had that sourness in his personality the last few years when things go wrong or when he's not winning games, where he fights off himself, he starts blaming other people, he might go behind someone's back and say something else. But it seems to me as the guys on the Commanders just don't really ever respect and revolve around Carson. Now, it's easy to say I'm wrong when in the beginning of the year he was playing really well and he was throwing a bunch of points, but that's been Carson's career. As soon as things go south, he turns into a bad guy, and I think that's a disconnect with the entire team and Ron Rivera, how he was throwing him against the... You never, ever, ever hear coaches go blatantly tell media that to the whole world that your quarterback is your problem with the football team. You never see it. And Ron Rivera is a good guy. I like Ron Rivera in Carolina. He's a cool guy. You know, he's a football dude. And you never see it. So that speaks a lot to me about what they and the locker room might think of Carson Wentz.
You're right.
Now, that might mean nothing, but if you're telling me they're hyping up Heineke, you know, they're, you know, slapping him on the ass, whatever, having a blast with him, then that's just culture. And maybe he's bringing a really bad vibe in that locker room.
Yeah, and whether that's fair or not to Carson, whether that is, you know, on Carson, maybe Carson isn't a good locker room guy, or if it's just, you know, the bad situations that he's been in the last couple of years have, you know, kind of put that stereotype on, whether it's fair or not, it's the truth. I mean, you know, coming from a, you know, from an insider, you know, in Washington in terms of, you know, how, you know, throughout the week, you know, you hear people, you know, talking about, you know, the guys running out for practice and, you know, running up to Heineke, you know, that, you know, that's my starter, like, you know, things like that. Heineke is fun to watch because he makes a lot of things happen that are unexpected, and it covers up all the bad things, like in a lot of, you know, laid back fans' heads. Because he makes a lot of mistakes, and he's not a very good quarterback. Honestly, in terms of talent, he's probably a D-talent quarterback. And for Carson, it's not like that. No. At this point in his career, Carson's not flashy. He's not running around and making plays. He's a pocket passer.
He's a B-minus quarterback. He's a B quarterback.
Yes, and there's no doubt in my mind that Carson Wentz is a better quarterback than Heineke. But they rally around him, and they don't rally around Carson for some reason, whether that's fair or not, like you just pointed out, and I don't know if it's fair or not. Because I'm not in that locker room. But it is the case. And it does bring up a problem because we heard rumors last year about, you know, the locker room culture in Indianapolis. We know how bad it soured in Philadelphia towards the end. Now, you know, if Heineke maybe rattles off, you know, another win or two before Carson comes back and, you know, it's more of an upbeat feeling in Washington, even though they're still not very good. And they know, if you are a smart football fan and you actually watch, not just emotionally, you see that Carson Wentz is better than Heineke. But, you know,
it's chemistry.
You're right. It really is. And it matters. And chemistry matters.
Especially in football, dude. Yes. Especially in football. People play harder for you.
Yes.
And one more thing before we move on. I know we've been on this for a bit. But, real quick. Philadelphia, right? They ran him out of town at the end of his career. Indianapolis, they ran him out of town at the end of that tenure. Mm-hmm. Are there rumors of trying to get Carson Wentz out of town? Like, hey, you know what? I've seen enough of Carson Wentz. I've seen the mistakes. I saw what he could do, but he's very capped off. I need a guy, because you said, like, laid-backs fans see this guy who's fun to be around and, you know, just looks like he's having a blast, and you like to see him play he's more than you like to see Carson Wentz play.
Yeah.
Has that came up, you think, in around Washington at all?
I don't think so, because there's no trade market for him.
That definitely is one thing.
There's no trade market for him. Oh, goodness. And I think, honestly, I think a more realistic thing to happen than him being traded, you know, at some point, you know, during the season before the deadline would be we just don't see him the rest of the year and we see a mix of Heineke and then maybe towards the end, you know, once the season's, you know, over, maybe a little bit of the rookie Sam Howell because they do have a certain amount of snaps or a percentage of snaps that Wentz has to play. And if he doesn't play that amount of snaps, they do get a little bit of the draft capital back that they traded for him.
Right.
So I think if they do think that Heineke gives them just as good of a shot, or if they know the season's over and they don't believe in Carson and they want to just move on and keep a little bit of that draft capital that they originally gave up, I could see them just sitting him for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
There's no trade market for him, dude. There's just not. So I don't see that as a possibility.
You can go get Baker Mayfield if you like from Carolina.
Who's better right now?
That's an option.
I mean,
let's move on. Quarterbacks are fun to talk about. Carson Wentz always brings up the worst out of me, the best, you know, all between. Chiefs Niners, fun game, great game, fun to watch, at least from a viewing point. Not as if you're a Niners fan, you watch your team get absolutely slaughtered in the second half of a football game, but it was fun. And Patrick Mahomes is the dude, man. I can't get enough to say about him. Obviously, he's hyped up the entire league. But he just makes every great – he always makes a great play. He's never out of a play, but he doesn't – he makes bad decisions sometimes. He'll force things down, but he gets away with it because of his arm talent's insane, and he's just a really solid quarterback, man. He makes everyone better. I mean, you're making Mecole Hardman look like the next Tyreek Hill. Like, you're just slotting him in, and boom, he's Tyreek Hill.
When he's probably a fourth or fifth string punt returner on 90% of the NFL.
Exactly.
Teams.
Juju started to come out of his shell and really start to get a chemistry with him as he's their, I think, their number one wide receiver on that team. Well, he is. He is the one wide receiver, but it's Travis Kelce or nobody at the beginning of the year.
Yep.
And now you're starting to see the entire offense click more, and that's only scary.
You're right. Scary is the perfect word for it. I mean, there's a reason the Chiefs are always prime time, and you know everyone always watches Chiefs games.
Denver's been more prime time than them.
Kansas City's fun to watch, man. They are. Patrick Mahomes is electric. We just talked about Heineke for 15 minutes. Patrick Mahomes is Taylor Heineke, but with talent. I mean, the guy is so electric. For the 49ers, they couldn't get the run game going, and if you're San Francisco, if you can't run a football, you're not going to win because Jimmy Garoppolo cannot win you a football game of this magnitude by himself. He's just not that guy. He's just not. But the bigger thing for San Francisco in this game for me is this is 2 weeks in a row where your defense was horrible. I mean, Kansas City is one of the best offenses in football, so you get a little bit of, you know, a break in terms of that. But Atlanta last week, he gave up a ton of points in that loss. You've now lost a couple in a row if you're San Francisco, and the defense doesn't look good, which is something that they always hang their hat on. This does concern me a little bit if I'm San Francisco, just because of how the game played out. If this was a little bit of a different situation and they still lost by 20, I think I could look at it a little bit better for San Francisco because Kansas City's just that good. But there were some concerns here for me in terms of Christian McCaffrey, they traded for him. We didn't get to talk about it, you know, last week because it was after the fact. So I guess we'll probably talk about that a little bit now. But he wasn't as involved as I would have liked him, you know, to be, even though, you know, he probably doesn't know enough of the playbook yet or anything. So can't really be upset about that. But yeah, man, I mean, the Chiefs are for real. You talked about, I mean, they had, if they were going to do anything this year, they had to find somebody else other than Kelce, because at some point, as good as Travis Kelce is, if he's the only guy, there's got to be a way to stop him if he's the only guy. So
especially in the playoffs.
Yes. So if you open up Juju as at least a little bit of a threat, Mecole Hardman as a little bit of a threat, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who I still don't think has had a ton.
You know, a long catch.
Yeah, he hasn't had a ton on this team so far, but I like him a lot, and I think he could, as the year goes on, you know, prove to be very beneficial for them. That just makes Travis Kelce even better, which is what you know Kansas City is going to do to win football games. Big win for Kansas City, for the 49ers. A lot of concern coming out of this game, especially at home.
Yeah, and I think it's on defense. It's all defense. Now, I know they got some guys back this week. That's the guys back. They're still not completely healthy, but they just got ran through, you know, and you don't see it from this team. The team usually fights against any team in general, and there was no fight. It was fight early, and I think they just, I don't know what it was, worn down, maybe some fatigue, or just the Chiefs are better. The Chiefs are just better, and that offense is very good. And one thing that was I wanted to say about the Christian McCaffrey thing is I think it's perfect for this type of team. I really do think he will fit this team nicely once he gets involved. He's basically a better version of Deebo Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
Not wide receiver wise, but rushing the football wise, he can use him. You can throw him out on and wide if you really want to. And those two are dynamic players, both of them. And that's the offense they want to run. That's the style of player they like to use. Now, they need their powerhouse backs back, which I think they're going to get Elijah Mitchell back, possibly this week or next week. He'll be activated off the IR. Jeff Wilson had did something last week. He did absolutely nothing. But he came back to earth a little bit today. Yeah. And I think San Francisco is going to be okay. I think they're going to be fine. But saying the same thing, it's Jimmy can't win you games. So if your running game's not there, you're losing. And if you're playing a good team, you're going to get blown out.
I think here what you're seeing now a little bit is why they decided to start with Trey Lance.
Agreed. That's a good point.
Even though Lance is probably going to make some more mistakes because he's so young and inexperienced, and he might even lose you a couple of games that Jimmy G won't lose you, Trey Lance would have given you a better opportunity to hang around in this game than Garoppolo. And there's no doubt in my mind of that. You know, even if there were some mistakes, you know, made, you know, trying to make something happen to stay in the game, you had a better chance of staying in the game against one of the best teams in football with Trey Lance. And I was a little tone deaf to that early in the year. I thought they should have went with Garoppolo. This game really outlined it for me, and they can't win games on the back of Jimmy G.
No, they can't. Trey Lance got the legs for it, and that type of style of play. And the arm. Yeah, he does have an arm. But his style fits his team more than Jimmy G's completely. Jimmy G is a, you know what? He'd probably do good in Indy, dude. Throw him in Indy. He'd probably do well in Indy. Not saying anything. I mean, maybe not. I'm completely wrong. But
wouldn't shock me with the way Andy goes about quarterbacks.
You know what I'm saying? Go get Jimmy. Get his last year of his contract, whatever he is. But all in all, takeaway, great win for Kansas City. Yes. They look just as good as the Bills. If not, just on par with their offense right now. And they're back to being Kansas City, man. This is a good win for them against a solid defense. Like, there's no slouch here. So, really good win. And Travis Kelce, you mentioned Travis Kelce. He had 6 catches for 98 yards again, but different thing is here with Travis Kelce is he was more open. He had more chunk plays. He had a 27-yard catch. He had a couple 15-yard catches, which, like you're saying, if you're going to open up your outside, he's going to be open, and goodness, man, it's the possibilities for this team are really endless.
If you have Mecole streaming down the one side of the field, Juju on a comeback or on the other side, that the whole middle of the field is going to be open. And if they're going to decide to go to Kelce, you're going to have those other two guys. If they have one or two of these receivers playing at a really high level, they're almost unstoppable with who Travis Kelce is.
Seriously, yes.
Travis Kelce is honestly unbelievable. What he does is unbelievable.
He's the only tight end that does it, in my opinion.
And I know I'm not, you know, saying anything crazy here, so I'm not going to, you know, go on and on, but what he does is unbelievable, and if you give him a little bit of help with somebody else, they're going to be almost unstoppable with Patrick Mahomes at the helm.
Goodness. We can't talk enough about the Chiefs, man. No. Andy Reid, you know, the guys just, they get it. They do it right every year with the guys that they bring in and the guys that they, homegrown guys that they have, and they just, they always do it right. So good on them. We'll see them, I'm sure, Super Bowl, probably years, you know, we'll see. The rematch with Bills, with the Bills and the AFC Championship game will be fun. But we'll move on to a team that I don't really, don't know what they are. It's the Chargers. What are the Chargers? They're a team.
Not what we thought they were going to be.
No, they're not even close. Are they the, okay, I wrote this down in our notes here, just thinking about it. Are the Chargers, for what they're supposed to be coming to this year, with the defense that I heard about that was supposed to be the best defense that in this league, with the weapons and the Austin Eckler being even better, Justin Herbert another year, are they the most disappointing, this is a big one, disappointing, hyped up team to a point to where I'm like, they were supposed to be the next great offense in this league? Do you think they're the most disappointing team when it comes to offense that we've seen so far this year?
I think in terms of up and coming teams, yes. I think in terms of just overall most disappointing, it's got to be Tampa. But in terms of up and coming teams, yeah.
Yeah, Tampa. Yeah, well, here's the thing with Tampa, real quick, before you keep going. The thing with Tampa, which I'll get into it again if I have to.
Please, no.
It's like Tom Brady is as good as he is. There's going to be a cap to just what they're able to do with the weapons that they have. Like the running backs, they don't have the running back. They have an Austin Eckler. They have a Mike Williams, or not Mike Williams. Well, they do have a Mike Williams.
They do have one of those as well.
Tampa Bay has a Mike Evans and a Chris Godwin, who, those guys are both injury prone. They're a little bit banged up, both of them, every game. They just lost Mike Williams, which is unfortunate.
They did.
But Keenan Allen, who also is injury prone, but these guys, like, the team is supposed to be better. Gerald Everett's a good piece for them. I think you see DeAndre Carter all of a sudden taking a really big role. He's playing really good this season.
Yep.
But
former Commander.
But and a former Eagle, actually.
Oh, really?
Former punt returner.
I actually didn't know that. He returned punts for us last year.
Perfect. And it's kind of like how we talk about Tampa Bay a little bit. They're similar, because how you said, is their defenses are supposed to be the ones that are really shine, but with the offense that Chargers are supposed to be, I think it's just disappointing because they have shown nothing, and they don't look good. They look bad. Yeah. They look bad. It's something's not working, or you know, they're just winning games, but they're playing all right football. They're just playing bad football.
No, you're totally right. They have been disappointing. There's no doubt about that.
I was reaching a little bit.
In terms of the game, I don't know whether to think about the Chargers offense or the Seahawks defense, actually. I mean, I don't know if it was more, you know, bad offense by Herbert and the guys, or if the Seattle defense is actually pretty solid when, you know, we really gave them no credit coming into the year for anything, you know, offense or defense. I mean, for Seattle, I mean, you know, we got to talk about Kenny Walker a little bit. I mean, the guy,
yeah,
the guy's a stud. I mean,
he's superstar.
I mean, ridiculous. They ran the ball so easily against this Chargers defense. You know, the DK Metcalf injury doesn't look like it's going to be crazy serious. You know, might hurt them, but I mean, yes, the Chargers overall have been disappointing, because you talked about the defense. You gave up 37 points to the Seattle Seahawks with Geno Smith, you know, behind the helm. I mean, that's a bad look, you know, in it by itself without any context, period.
Yeah, it is.
So, yes, they've definitely been disappointing. And, you know, we talked about how crazy this division was going to be coming into the year, and it's the Chiefs already. It's over. Like,
it's the opposite.
It's pretty much over.
Like, this is the opposite. Yeah,
it's honestly one of the easiest divisions now to predict through 7 weeks.
The opposite of what we expected. oh, my goodness.
And a lot of that has to do with KC and how good they've been, but a lot of it also has to be with how bad the Chargers and the Broncos and the Raiders have been. And the Chargers are no better than the other two that were just spoken. They have been very disappointing.
Absolutely. And I think we do have to give credit to Seattle, man. They're in more games than I thought this year. I thought Seattle would have been one of the worst team in the league.
I thought they were going
next
to
the Bears.
To be the worst. I thought they were going to be the worst team. I thought they were going to be worse than Chicago, worse than Houston, worse than Detroit, worse than anybody else you can think of. I thought they were going to be 32 of 32.
Did we drop the gun with just, you remove Russell Wilson and that's it? What else did they do? I mean, their defense, they don't have every player, but they're stepping up. I mean, Cody Barton, who I know is not a name, but Cody Barton in the last like few weeks, I've got to see his tackles so far this year. Let's take a peek really quickly. Because he's a linebacker, and for them, they're built around the linebackers. And they've always had good ones. I mean, Bobby Wagner was another one. This guy, in week one, he had 10 tackles. He had a sack. Week two, 11 tackles. Week three, 6. Week four, 7 tackles. Week five, 12 tackles. The guy is a tackling machine, and he's making a lot of plays. And something that's interesting to me, I know that's just a random guy just point out in the middle of the defense that we're trying to hype up a little bit, but there's guys that are stepping up for this team you didn't even know who they were, and they're all stepping up. That has to go with a good coach, a guy that, again, is respected, and your teammates like to play for them, which on other teams you don't see people. Yes. You don't see people rising to occasions or, you know, proving coaches wrong or wanting to go out there and win a job or something. These guys are playing really good football defensively to the point where I think they're a top 15, top 12 defensive team in football right now, where I wouldn't be surprised if, let's see who they play next game. I think they play, do they play the Giants? They do. This would be an interesting test. I'm using test in quotations here for the Giants, but Seahawks are playing good football, and this is in Seattle. We'll see. We'll see what the Giants are made of this week.
You did say something about Seattle's coaching, and I think that is something that we should talk about a little bit, because last year, and you know, even the year before, when it was starting to go a little bit sour with Russ Wilson in Seattle, Pete Carroll was catching a lot of slack from a lot of people around the league. You know, a lot of people were throwing a lot of the blame for, you know, that soured relationship on Pete Carroll. And, you know, not to mention, I think, you know, at this point, it's pretty obvious who won that trade, and it was Pete Carroll. But he's got his guys going right now, and
they're humming.
Without Russ Wilson, with, you know, a guy behind the helm that was pretty much, every other team, you know, in the league has abandoned the guy for 10 years now, you know, in terms of, you know, thinking of him as a starter. And Pete Carroll's taken this guy and has him playing good football, has his team playing good football. I think Pete Carroll does deserve a lot of credit for what Seattle has looked like so far this year. And I just wanted to highlight that because I don't think a lot of people are talking about it.
You see more of your coaches and how good they are and how well they are with the team when your team's not as good, and see what they look like and how they're playing in games. And this team's playing really well. And I think that shows more to the Denver side, the John Elways of the world, that, you know what, they can't figure it out. And if Russell Wilson really started to become a cancer in for them, that he's just bringing it over, and they wanted him out. Obviously, he wanted out, they wanted him out, and it was probably better for them in the long run. And to your point, you thought they were going to be the bottom of the barrel in the league, and so did I. But they're 4-3, and to be honest, that division, they're right there in that division right now. I don't think they're going to win the division, but they're there. They're in the thick of it.
They're competitive.
And they're playing. They're competitive. That's what you want. Exactly. They're competitive. More competitive than I think any of us saw, or anybody at all really saw. So good on them. I still think it's more of the Chargers. They got to figure it out, because that's supposed to be a really good team.
It is.
And that's why I'm calling them one of my, I would say, one of the more disappointing teams.
Yes.
Especially
for sure,
just what they were coming into the year, what they're supposed to be. I want to touch on the Chicago game a little bit, the Monday Night Football game. Not much. But we saw Mac Jones return.
For a little bit.
And he did not look good.
No, he did
at
not.
All.
No.
And you know what? Bailey Zappi should start the damn football games. I just don't like Mac Jones. So this is just a vendetta on me. But Bailey Zappi went in there and did a decent job. Didn't win him a game, because Justin Fields had a good game, and they ran the football well, and they played good defense. And sloppy over there on New England side. Because Bailey did throw two picks. So, I mean, it's not like he was a world beater, but what do you think about this game? We don't have to talk about it much, but just broad expectations.
Mac Jones or Bailey Zappi, Bill Belichick, freaking pick one. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's Zappi. I don't care if it's Mac Jones. Pick your guy, go with him. Because all you're doing right now is you're tearing down the confidence of both of these guys by juggling them back and forth. And, I mean, credit to the Bears. They had a really good game plan. They came out and they stuck it to Bill Belichick. But for me, the takeaway, I was honestly disgusted by how Bill Belichick approached, you know, the quarterback play in this game. I know he said he wanted to go with both guys, and then when Mac threw the first pick, he took Mac out, and then he later said that it wasn't because of the interception. Why was it? Why would you take him out then, right after an interception? Like, I don't get it. I don't get what Bill Belichick's trying to do right here. I think he's trying to outsmart everybody. And it just, at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to work. You're going to tear down the confidence of both of these guys. And I think out of both of these guys, I think you have some good qualities in both of them that you might be able to use to your benefit. And I think you need to do a better job of displaying that, because this was a very poor looking performance from Bill Belichick's team.
Yeah, you're at home in New England and
prime time against the
Bears. I mean, come on.
Excuse my language.
Yeah, you know, it is what it is. The excuses were flowing. I don't like the excuses, especially from a Bill Belichick-led team, who's he obviously is extremely respected, and he can't... You're right. You can't do stuff like this to your guys' confidence levels, but this is more on their defense. They played really, really well. What was it, against the Bears or the Browns last week?
Yep.
They did nothing. The Bears just kind of did whatever they wanted on the ground. And that's really shocking to me, because the Bears have shown nobody anything.
No.
And you know what? Good on the Bears. I really don't want to talk about it anymore. Because this
either.
Is such a... It's an awful game on
this
prime time.
This game annoyed me more than anything.
Excuse me again? Yeah, annoyed's a great answer. It annoyed me to see the Patriots lose this game like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, good on Justin Fields. Good for them. They only win the rain. So, that's what... They're 2-for-2 in rain games. Any games you want to touch on for next week, man? Anything else you want to mention? I know you like to just bust my balls about some opinions and some team. What did I say? Did I get anything wrong? I said the Jets. We both said the Jets last week. What were our picks? We can start it this week. We said we're going to start a little picking thing.
Yes.
You want to start it? We'll start it this week.
One thing while you're, you know, getting that ready, or, you know, whatever you want to do with that, I just want to touch on something real quick in terms of the Jets. The Breece Hall injury is, not a good thing. Very unfortunate. You hate that for the kid who was playing so well. You hate that for, you know, the Jets who were playing so well with him. And they do make the trade for James Robinson. We'll see if that, you know, helps supplement what Breece was able to give them a little bit with, you know, now Robinson and Michael Carter in the backfield. But really do hate to see that for, you know, the young kid in Breece Hall, who was just
having a great year,
on fire. And, you know, I don't really want to talk about the Jets in detail or, honestly, the injury. But I did just want to touch on it. I felt like, you know, it needed to be said that, you know, the James Robinson trade for, you know, the sixth-round pick and the Breece Hall torn ACL.
Sixth-round pick is nothing.
Sixth-round pick, and depending on the amount of snaps he plays, it could be a fifth. But come on. Great trade for the Jets. I mean, they waste no time.
All right, what I want to do for this, I want to give you three games that I'm going to give you. You're going to give me your picks for them. And you're going to tell me, and we're going to figure out at the end of the year who's right on certain games or wrong in certain games. I think that's simple enough. If you want to have your own, and you can have your own pick if you like. You can have your own pick. So actually, that's what we're going to do. We're going to do two picks that I'm going to give you. You're going to give me a pick of the week that you think, and maybe, I don't know, you don't have the score predictions there, but
yeah. Just
give me your pick. So first off, I want to give you is the, let's go over to, let's go Cardinals-Vikings in Minnesota.
Ooh, that's a tough one. Arizona's offense looked really good with D-Hop. I think I'm going to take Minnesota, though. They're coming off the bye. They're going to be well-rested at home. They've looked really good. And I think they're going to be able to run the ball with a little bit of ease on Arizona's defense.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm going to take the Vikings at home in a close one against the Cardinals.
Okay, fair enough. I like that. Now we just talk about this. I want to, you know, bring it back up. Giants-Seahawks. I know this could be a random one, but give me your take. Giants-Seahawks.
No bias.
In Seattle.
No bias here. I think I'm going to take the Seahawks in Seattle. Seattle's a really tough place to play for anybody. And, you know, like we talked about with the Giants game, I don't think the Giants played very well on Sunday against Jacksonville. And Seattle is playing really well. And like I said, it's one of the harder places to go and win a game on the road.
The 12s.
So, yes. So, give me Seattle in a close game, but give me the home team.
I like it. Now, give me a pick if you're looking at the schedule that you like here, that you are your most, if you had to call it a lock, you would have threw 100 on it and take a win, you know, 50-50 chance. What's your team?
Looking at the slate, I'm going to take the Cowboys at home against Chicago. I think, you know, Chicago's going to be riding high, off their win. And I would even, the line right now that I'm seeing is Cowboys -9 at home. I'd even take the 9 points.
Here's the thing, real quick, I think we're going to add to this. Just make it more fun.
Hey, man, whatever you want
to
do.
Listen to this. I think for our own picks here, we can add it as a survival challenge type of thing, a survivor pool. But okay, since I'm going to be picking, and you're going to be picking two teams a week, that eliminates you be able to have a team with only what? I mean, there's a lot of teams, 11 weeks left in the season. So whatever team you use here, so if you're going to use your Cowboys here as a win for the week, you can't use them for next week or weeks after. They're done. That's your lock-in as your pick for a win, certain win for the week. All right. You want to change your pick? You want to stick with the Cowboys? We'll stick with Jerry's world and... You know what I'm saying?
I think, you know what, to be honest with you, I think that will change my pick.
All right, let's do it. Survivor pick time, baby. Come on.
I already know who I'm going to go with here. I'm going to go with the Falcons at home against the Carolina Panthers. Their offenses look good 2 weeks in a row. They gave up a lot of points against Cincinnati, but the offense looked pretty solid. Carolina, I just don't really believe in them. I think that game was more about Tampa Bay than it was about Carolina.
Agreed.
And at home, give me the Atlanta Falcons.
All right, survivor pick. So you got Vikings against the Arizona Cardinals at home, Seahawks against the Giants at home, and your survivor pick of the week is going to be the Falcons. So that team is now eliminated from possible contention, just like the New York Yankees were.
That was a low blow.
And now we're going on to the next one. Here we go.
All right, so I'm giving you two then?
Yes, give me two.
All right, first one I'm looking at is Denver in Jacksonville against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Do I think they figure it out? Is Russell Wilson going to be healthy? Maybe. Does that make it better? Maybe. They're in London, so we'll see. Jacksonville, they're a tough team.
They're competitive.
Give me Denver.
Okay.
In this game.
Broncos country, let's ride.
Give me Denver in this game. I'll buy a field goal.
Okay. All right. And there is a little bit of strategy with this. You want to give the other person a little bit of a tough game to pick.
Give me a tough game to pick.
And I thought that was
the survivor pick's important. Then you give me
I thought that one was a pretty solid one. I think I have another solid one for you. Colts at home with Ellinger behind the dish.
Ellinger versus Heinicke is
against
what we're doing.
Taylor Heinicke and the Washington Commanders, 4:25 game. On Sunday. I think this one is tougher than
This is a very tough pick. The Commanders came off of a win that they, again, stole in Green Bay. They haven't looked good. The Colts, on the other hand, have looked probably worse. But they have better weapons right now. And do I see Washington maybe getting Ellinger? Perhaps. Their defensive line is still good. I think they're paid a stud.
Yep.
I'll take Washington.
Wow. So
I'll take Washington. I don't believe in the Colts' comeback story. I like Sam Ellinger, but I'll give you Washington.
Just to put it on the record, AJ is rolling with the Denver Broncos and the Washington Commanders. Just want to throw that
Denver
out there.
Commanders, two picks of the week. Now I got to pick a survivor team.
The survivor.
I got to pick a survivor team. My team that I'm going to survive this week will be, wow, this is interesting. Give me the Tennessee Titans against Houston.
Okay.
That's my team. I wanted to go Ravens against Bucks, but you know what? It's primetime. Maybe primetime GOAT shows up. So I'll take Tennessee versus Houston. And honestly, I don't know what the spread is in that game. You have the spread up for me?
Houston's at home, and they are 2-point dogs at home.
2-point dogs. Yeah, give me Tennessee by two. In that game. Not that the spread matters, but for any betting purposes, I want to take my pick seriously, go for it. So that'll be it. I think this is going to be a little fun game that we're going to do each week with the Survivor game, which will be interesting to see how long one of us can go without getting a pick wrong. I mean, obviously, we'll get one of the two picks wrong each week, probably. But the Survivor thing adds a little bit more of a...
Oh, yeah.
It just adds more fun to it. So it's been a long one. It's been a fun one. Hopefully, you didn't get boarded out. But, man, it's football. It's football. There's always things to talk about. But with that being said, that's going to be all. I appreciate everyone for listening. We will be back next Tuesday night for week 8 of the NFL season. And hopefully Tom Brady, you know, keeps my opinion alive and decides to play dead next week.
Make us talk about you, Tom.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a great night.